Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. Glad you're here with me for part three of this deepest of deep dives of Johnny Depp. Honestly, when it first started, I wasn't even sure I would finish the one. And, you know, this is quite a bit still to go over for part three for the last podcast of October. As I'm sitting down to record this third part, it's quite the timing. If you listen to the second part, the Whitey Bulger died this morning in his West Virginia prison. So I guess the question is whether Johnny's just going to offer up another praise-filled statement or if he'll attend the funeral. You know, be a chance for him to rub shoulders with even more members of the mob. I think it's possible. You know, like I said, as I'm recording this, I just found out that he died. I don't know if Johnny's actually said anything or if anybody's asked him or if Johnny's conscious. So, but since we're on the subject of Johnny's love of death and surrounding himself with it, then let's talk about Johnny and his fascination. And I guess that's the word with Damien Echols of the West Memphis Three. Now, if you're not familiar with it, well, if you're familiar with it, I'm just gonna take a minute just to describe it all, and then if you're not familiar with it, I give you a little bit here, and then you can always dig on your own. But what it was three men who were convicted while teenagers of the 1993 murder of three boys, and Damien Echols was sentenced to death. And the other two people got varying life sentences, like two life sentences or a life sentence with 25 years. I mean, basically going to spend the vast majority of their time in prison, you know, and like I said, Echols was sentenced to death. The prosecution during the trial called it a satanic ritual, and I would kind of have to agree with that. There was a documentary made called Paradise Lost. And, you know, I've seen the documentary, but I watched it so long ago that I don't even, I mean, obviously I remember what it's about, but I don't remember the arguments that they used in it or anything like that anymore. I think it's still on HBO. So if you have HBO, you can get it. Otherwise, I don't know about the other streaming services. And the only reason I think it's on HBO is I think when I was blowing through some documentaries within the last week, I think I saw it on there. But check your streaming if you want to watch it. It's older now. I want to say maybe late 90s, early 2000s, probably early 2000s. But like I said, take a look. But what happened was after the documentary came out, it basically, all these celebrities were kind of galvanized to try and get them out. But it seemed like the celebrities that were kind of galvanized generally were in the music industry, which I kind of thought was a little bit odd. And you didn't get a lot of actresses or anything like that or women saying that, hey, they should get out. But that's basically these singers and such helped to get them out. And so in 2010, after serving a little over 18 years, they were each released. Now, this is something that is very important to note. They were not acquitted. They were not exonerated by DNA. I call them stone cold killers. I have, like I said, I have no problem with the characterization of the prosecutors that called it a satanic ritual. You know, it seems to fit for me. Echols, especially, he is creepy and scary, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. And remember, I'm not going to talk a ton about this because this is still a deep dive on Johnny Depp, but I want you to kind of understand the people that he's associating with and all the people that we've already talked about and the murders that he's so close to And once again, I ask you to check your own memories and your own thoughts. And how many deaths, suspicious deaths, have you been involved in, tied to, or known about that have personally affected you in your life? And here's, you know, Johnny basically involved in at least two with River and Anthony Fox. And then peripherally with like the West Memphis Three and Whitey Bulger and things like that. What there was in this case, how they got out, there was some new DNA discovered in addition to the defendants and the victims. There was also, but it wasn't instead of. Do you know what I'm saying? It was additional, not instead of. And I think that that's a big difference. There was also some potential, but not proved, juror misconduct by one juror. And again, it wasn't proved or anything like that. There was just the potential that it could be called juror misconduct. So prosecutors made a deal. The West Memphis Three were allowed to assert their innocence while agreeing prosecutors had enough to convict them. So it's not really like a guilty plea. It's more akin to maybe like a nolo contendere plea, where you're not saying whether or not you're guilty or innocent, but they're going to treat you like you're guilty. But it hasn't been proved. And this one is, they're agreeing that the prosecutors had enough to convict them. They're just basically allowed to say, we didn't do it. Well, you can say you didn't do it, even if you're convicted. So this is not the same as someone who was wrongfully prosecuted and sentenced, who's exonerated by DNA, and then sues the state. I mean, these people cannot sue the state at all. In fact, until 2021, if they do anything illegal, they go back to jail. When the judge let them out, he basically said, you're just getting out with time served, which was the 18 years plus, and then added on a 10-year suspended sentence. So now, granted, if they do anything crazy, they'll only have to go back until 2021. But this was just not a get-out-of-jail-free thing. This was just basically the luckiest of lucky breaks, and the fact that the prosecutors screwed up just enough where the pressure, they didn't know what they would get on a retrial or a second trial, or if there was a new trial. And then also then they'd be subjecting themselves to some kind of lawsuit if there was a second trial or something like that. But Eccles told people before the murder that he gained power by drinking blood. And he also said that inside him was a spirit of a woman who had killed her husband. This is not a nice guy. This is not anybody that any of us would want to hang out with. Yet somehow Johnny thinks that this guy is amazing and incredible. A brother. I mean, this guy is basically Johnny Depp's new best friend. In an interview with Loudwire, Marilyn Manson was kind of asked about it, because it was basically right after they had got out. And Marilyn said that he and Johnny and Eccles had started referring to themselves as the West Hollywood Three. Now, that's just bizarre. You know, I mean, the West Memphis Three were killers, and now you're referring to yourself as the West Hollywood Three. You know, you want to be associated with a guy who killed three boys in a satanic ritual. The trio, Marilyn and Johnny and Eccles, also got matching tattoos. I mean, this is like bonkers kind of stuff. Why would you get a tattoo? And if you're Marilyn Manson, why would you get a tattoo with at least one, if not two, murderers? If you count Johnny, if you think in any way he was responsible for the death of River, or complicit in the death of his business partner, Anthony Fox. Manson said he was humbled to meet Eccles. He said that he and Johnny consider Eccles a brother. That's just, I mean, at what point is this just like, you say to yourself, that's really weird, really strange, and I think that you're creepy AF, and, you know, just keep him away. See, now, when Eccles got out of jail, he needed a place to live. And where he ended up going was to Eddie Vedder's house. Now, Eddie had been one of the biggest proponents of getting him out. You know, he had played charity concerts and done things to help pay for a DNA test. Henry Rollins had also helped pay for a DNA test with a concert. Marilyn Manson had sold a painting to help for the legal bills. I mean, this was a joint effort by several musicians and then the one male actor, Johnny Depp. So he went to go live with Eddie and Eddie's wife. And also, Eccles had got married while in prison. Yeah, you have to wonder about her. I mean, that takes a special kind of person. She probably thought that he would never get out. So, hey, I'll get some free publicity. I'll go marry this guy. And then when he dies, I can sell his life story because I'll have the rights to it. And I don't ever have to really hang out with him. I don't have to have sex with him. I just have to go on visiting day like once a month. I mean, it's the same thing that the woman did with Charles Manson. You know, and she almost got everything. You know, and ended up going to one of his relatives. But if she hadn't kind of gone off the deep end there for a little bit, I mean, she had hung on for like a year, she would have been the one in charge of Charles Manson's estate. So anyway, he goes to live with Eddie and his wife, and Eccles brings his own wife. And this is the part that everyone kind of glosses over. If you ever read an article or an interview with Eccles, it just says, yeah, I went to go live with Eddie, and then it kind of just stops. Because Eccles ended up moving in with Johnny, and he always says, oh, yeah, so now I live with Johnny. And the reason is because Eddie and his wife were freaked out by the guy once he was out of prison and in their home. You know, when somebody's in prison and you're trying to get them out, it's kind of all abstract. There's the episode of Seinfeld where George is dating the person who's in prison, and he thinks it's great because, you know, you get all the benefits of it, but there's no pop-ins or anything like that. And then when the person gets out of jail, then you realize, maybe I didn't really like that person. So you have Eddie putting up this fight to try and get him out, and Johnny trying, and all these other people. And you think, oh, well, I think he's innocent, so of course, hey, come and live with us while you get back on your feet. And you finish writing your book. So he moves in, but then they're like, get the hell out. I can't even imagine. Could you sleep at night knowing that there was somebody in there who, you know, probably killed three little boys in a satanic ritual? And you have kids of your own at home? That person's not walking through the front door of any of our houses, I don't think. Let alone have him stay there with you and you have to try and sleep knowing he's there. And what about his wife? I have to look to see if they're still married. So if you know, put it in the comments. Because I didn't look it up to see if they're still married. I want to see how this is surviving him being out of jail. So he went to go live at Johnny's. And Johnny went out on Damien's book tour with him, and he travels with him. Not only do they have the one matching tattoo with Marilyn Manson, they have other matching tattoos that just the two of them share. And Depp called it, quote-unquote, celebrating the moment. He says he wears one tattoo that Eccles designed and that they both wear. I mean, they're like best friends. Who's best friends with a satanic ritual killer? You know, I mean, this is just going back to Johnny and his fascination with death and the people who surround themselves with death. He probably loved that this guy murdered people. Do you think that maybe he didn't even know whether or not really innocent, but it didn't really matter to Johnny, who's willing to take that chance? Or did he really think he was innocent, but because of the specter of death, that was good enough for Johnny's gore situation, his macabre sense of life? I know this deep dives about Johnny. But I think of Damien as a Charles Manson who got lucky. And I want you to think about this and notice that Johnny is the only one of Damien's celebrity supporters who's still kind of around. None of the others are out there making statements on his behalf or letting him live with them or anything like that. It's kind of like all the rest bailed when they realize how creepy and messed up the guy is. He's always wearing sunglasses and everything just kind of adds to all that. Johnny's just, he's obsessed with death. And honestly, there's a lot of little examples, not just in his movie choices, where he plays death and is dead and plays a ghost and all of that, but just in real life too. And it's also interesting that some of his movie choices have really been about the mafia or cartels and things like that. So he can really just explores the darker side of life and seems to embrace it. Even somebody like a Hunter S. Thompson. I mean, that is a darker side of life. And, you know, he embraced that. Even something like that you'd think be kind of like lighthearted, like Willy Wonka. I mean, granted, it was a Tim Burton Willy Wonka, but it's pretty dark compared to the original. All of his movies seemingly are dark. I mean, you'd have to go back all the way to, like, was it Private Resort or something like that? Maybe 21 Jump Street, where you just kind of just see him just taking what he can get and not shooting for death. I mean, even his first movie, Nightmare on Elm Street, gets killed in that, picking horror. It's just a lot of his parts, the vast majority of them, in fact, seem to have some kind of relation with death. And I think most actors, if you're around long enough, there's something that's going to, you know, be associated with death. Even like Adam Sandler has a death movie or two, or some kind of death is in there, or, you know, part of the story somewhere. But it's kind of like Johnny just goes out of his way to find the mob and death. So, one of the, because I didn't want to just do trivial kind of stories, but the official story of where Heath Ledger died is that it was a rental unit. And because of the massage therapist who had called Mary Kate and, you know, asked Mary Kate what to do instead of calling 911, it's kind of like a Chris Cornell situation where let's just spend as much time as we can calling anybody other than the people who could help. And this massage therapist calls Mary Kate and calls her four times, I think, and then finally calls 911. But meanwhile, Mary Kate has sent over security guards, probably to sweep the place, and didn't really get that much of a chance. But everybody just assumed that because Heath was renting this place, that it was perhaps Mary Kate's or Ashley's, And the official denial was, it was very carefully crafted to say something to the extent of the apartment was not being rented by Mary Kate and Ashley, or not owned by Mary Kate and Ashley. And I mean, technically that's true. I mean, it was in a trust. I can't remember if it was a trust or an LLC. One of the two. But the trust or the LLC was controlled by one of Mary Kate and Ashley's companies. So, I mean, I guess, yeah, technically it was true what they said. But anyway, back in 2011, Johnny just started really putting like heavy, heavy moves on Ashley. And everybody's kind of wondering, I mean, why? I mean, you'd think that he would have preferred Mary Kate since she was the last person to sleep with Heath Ledger. Do you guys remember that? Yeah, that she and Heath were hooking up and everything. And, you know, that's why her number was the first one that came up on the speed dial. And the massage therapist was recommended by Mary Kate. And a strong probability that Mary Kate knew or facilitated the drugs that Heath took. So we'd think that he would want to sleep with Mary Kate, but she was with somebody then. He settled for Ashley. Now, why did he pursue this? It's because he wanted to go inside the apartment. Apparently, he even wanted to have sex in the apartment. He did get to see it right before it was sold, and I believe it sold for about $5 million. And he got to see it thanks to Ashley. But if he had sex in it, I'm guessing Ashley said no. Ashley and Johnny, they don't really go together. She likes old guys, like her sister likes old guys. After, you know, Ashley did the whole Justin Bartha thing, it's pretty much just been old guys. And Mary Kate just likes the creepy old guys. The ones where the daughter's practically the same age as Mary Kate. And their whole interesting role-playing kind of games. I guess it shouldn't surprise me that his fascination for death should take him to somebody like Amber Heard. Because I used to refer to her on the site as Death. From Amber's, I went back and checked. From her third appearance on the site, long before she met Johnny or anyone knew her, I called her Death. That was her nickname. I would put, you know, Amber in the labels, but most often after that third time, I either referred to her by her ghoulish behavior or looking like death, because she did. You know, it's just when you see somebody and you see and you feel like their presence or something, that's what it looked like. She looked like death. I'd be scared of her. So this was way back in April 2008. And that was actually the first time I ever met her. And that's why I started calling her Death. Because when you're in that presence, it was the cold and the clammy, and she had this skeleton kind of feel. And at that time she was wearing, it wasn't goth, but she was like laying on the white kind of thing, just which just enhanced this skeleton type of thing. And it just kind of, when you walked near her, you know, not to be crazy, but not like a dementor, but I felt like it felt like she was sucking the life out of you as you walked by. And so since that time, since April 2008, I have always called her Death. And it's pretty interesting that the person that I've always referred to as Death ended up with the guy who he seems to surround himself with Death. It was about a year or so after that April 2008 meeting that I had with her that they met on the set of Rum Diary. Now, because Johnny was still with Vanessa, you have to have that whole, you know, Hollywood kind of tabloid puritanical timeline. So they say, oh, you know, he wasn't messing around with Amber on that set, even though he was. And he was also hooking up with Eva Green and Marion Cotillard. But the official story is that they didn't start... This is where it always gets ridiculous. They always start dating the day after, the week after, the same month. Tabloids love it when somebody breaks up, say, like, what's today, October 30th? So they break up October 30th. And then they wait till November 1st to start dating. And then they can just say in their article that so-and-so broke up in October and so-and-so started dating in November. Like it's an October 1st, November 30th type situation. And it makes them feel so much better. Because they don't like to imply or think about or any of that kind of stuff where anybody could possibly be cheating on anybody. When it seems like the vast majority of time, they do. And it's because they meet on sets. And they meet on sets away from their significant others. And they're with these people, often out of town, staying in hotels or, you know, Airbnbs now, but most of the time hotels, where they run into each other all hours of the night and day, and there's drinking, and, you know, it's basically taking your office spouse and just kind of having them multiplied. Because, you know, when you're at work, you're probably not drinking. If you're on set, you know, there could be some of that. And at the office, you know, let's just say it's 9 to 5. So then at 5 p.m. you go home. But what if you didn't go home for like 2 months? What if you just stayed at the office for 2 months straight, 24 hours a day? Kind of accelerates this whole office spouse kind of process. And the next thing you know, you're hooking up. And, you know, it's just, and most on-set romances, you know, stay on set. And if they don't, what usually happens is that you break up. It's kind of like when you see somebody late at night in a nightclub and they, you know, they look good. And then you see them the next day and you're like, oh, wow, I'm seeing you in a whole new light. It's the same kind of thing on set. You know, they are set hot rather than somebody I want to spend the rest of my life with. And it doesn't all have to be hot. I'm just using that as a term. They can be set intelligent. And then when they get off set, they're not so intelligent. And maybe it's because they, you know, when they're on set, that's kind of their thing. And so they're really good at it. But when they get off set, then they're just not good at it, that kind of stuff. And you see all the flaws. So they had said basically that even though they had met in 2009, they waited until Vanessa and Johnny officially broke up before they started dating. I think it's just kind of ridiculous. Just be straight up. This was kind of the situation like in Rum Diary, like that Angelina and Billy Bob had, you know, and where Billy Bob said goodbye to Laura Dern, you know, I'm going to go film a movie. And then he never came home again. Laura never saw him again. I mean, it's basically that. I mean, Johnny didn't officially move out, but he might as well have. You know, I mean, he was cheating on Vanessa, not just with Amber, but he also hooked up with Angelina Jolie. Yay! And you're saying, well, wasn't she with Brad? Yeah, you know, she cheated on Brad. Go read the blinds. She's not immune to cheating. She took Billy Bob when he was in a relationship. She has no qualms with that. She has no qualms hooking up with those married UN guys or the British cabinet guys that she's always hanging out with. So, yeah. So anyway, though, Johnny and Amber would usually meet up for like a weekend. And there was sex and drugs and money. And then Amber would go back to her girlfriend and Johnny would go back to Vanessa. But I think that this is why they managed to last until Johnny and Vanessa finally like officially split. It's because these weekends were infrequent enough that over this kind of two-ish year period, that even though the drugs and booze was there, the violence never really showed itself. I mean, he would yell and get angry, and she would too. Neither one of them was all that nice when they're drunk. We already knew about Johnny, but Amber's not that nice either. Now, this is not to say, and we'll talk about it later, that I do 100%, and I was probably the only one when TMZ was like trying to just victim trash Amber. I mean, why would you ever even think that she was lying about it? I mean, I know TMZ always takes the guy's side. But this is Johnny Depp we're talking about. It's not like he hadn't, you know, been physically abusive with other women. So why does it take a stretch? You know, it's because TMZ, again, is owned by Warner Brothers, you know, which owns movie studios and television shows. And Johnny's higher up on the list than Amber was. So we have to protect the guy. Plus, they just like to protect the guy. So they officially begin dating in June of 2012. And between 2012 and 2014, the blinds I was running pretty much focused on his temper and their fights. But also how Amber was stepping up the drugs and the booze game. And I was going to talk about the blinds. I have a whole I pulled out a whole series of blinds, basically. And I'm just going to read them, the ones that apply, just to kind of give you an idea what I was writing about them during the time period. And then kind of how, when it all kind of exploded, you know, things were there. So this one, I think that they go in order. You know, I say I think that. Hopefully. But this one is from July 2nd, 2013. And it says, this A-plus list mostly movie actor bailed on his fans and other obligations after his actress girlfriend told him he had 20 minutes to get to her place or she would not see him for a week. Apparently she has followed through on her threats before, so the actor hustled over as quickly as possible. And I said the guy's lust blind. So here you are in 2013, the middle of it, and she's basically just kind of asserting this control and this power over him. And you're going to see this kind of take shape that when he's sober, she's really trying to just establish this. And then later, when he starts drinking more and doing more drugs, and then he just kind of rebels against her and gets violent and, you know, starts hitting her, throwing things at her, just becoming incredibly abusive. So August 27th, 2013, I'm just going to say their names now. I'm not going to say the lists and all that. So basically this one was that Amber was kind of being accused of getting Lily Rose hooked on cigarettes. And Amber didn't think it was a big deal because she started when she was 13 and says it helps to keep you skinny. And that the actress mom of the daughter doesn't agree, although she's a chain smoker too, so who knows who's at fault. Then we have December 24th, 2013. And I'll just use the name. Johnny Depp got busted cheating on Amber Heard. She had a spy on the set who she used to sleep with and wants to sleep with her again. Johnny's been trying to win her back, and he eventually will because she is only with him for money and fame and has several people she sees for love. And that's true. I mean, throughout this whole time, I mean, if you think that Amber doesn't love her girlfriend more than just about anybody, then you're wrong. Johnny thinks he's in charge of the relationship, but he's just a toy being played. And that's true. And she's tried to do the same thing with Elon Musk. Again, she's a very manipulative person. It doesn't mean that she wasn't hit and a victim. But you see in this the parallels that were also in the Elon Musk relationship if you go back and look at those blinds. March 9th, 2014. Hang on, we'll skip that one. Go look for it yourself. April 12th, 2014, this A-list... Oh, so Johnny Depp left his premiere early to use drugs and ended up getting hammered on booze, too. By the time he made an appearance at an after party, he could barely stand and left for a threesome with Marilyn Manson and a woman they picked up. Doubt he could perform at that point. Now, this is what's interesting. And actually, that one's a little bit out of order. But when we get to... some of the violence that was caught on recordings was in May 2014. So what we see here is we see him starting to drink more, to use more, things like that. Let's see. Let's find some different ones. More ways cheating. It's always cheating. See, that's what I'm saying. Like a lot of these early ones, it's just they're cheating on each other constantly. And this has got to take some kind of, you know, toll on the relationship. And here's like 2015. So we're moving into another year. And Amber Heard has completely taken over the life of Johnny Depp and never lets him out of the house by himself. She's brought in people loyal to her and is basically in control of all his finances and decision making. So this is in 2015. And, you know, she would probably argue that it was being altruistic because he was out of control spending. He would argue that she was just after his money. Let's see. Oh, now we see this again in 2017, but this is kind of a theme. And it happened also back in the Kate Moss days when he was in, you know, really bad shape then too. It's from April 2015, and it says, a maid in a European hotel says she found a bunch of bloody towels in the bathtub of Johnny Depp. In the towels was a piece of plastic, the type that usually covers the needle of a syringe. It would really explain his strange behavior as of late. And then we see him now exhibiting that same kind of behavior. And then we go to July of 2015, and it says what Johnny Depp needs right now is Amber Heard to be sober, and she isn't. She likes to pretend she is and that she's sober and supportive, but she's just as out of control as he is. And that's true. I mean, these times where he's, you know, hitting her, which is inexcusable, but she's drunk too, you know? And, you know, it would have helped, I think, if one of them had been sober and been able to be rational. Then basically... there's one where she's cheating on actually on her girlfriend too. She's doing press for Magic Mike XXL. So this one's from September 2015. And it says, basically, Sienna Miller says she was cut from a movie not because she sucked in it, but because Amber found out that Sienna and Johnny were having sex in order for the actor to get her fired. The firing didn't happen, but the actress was cut. And then we see another one where she's trying to get control, again in 2015, and Amber has already spoken to a lawyer. She wants power of attorney over Johnny Depp. The lawyer said it would be much easier if they were married. Look out for the quickie wedding, and then watch out because the actor will never be the same. And voila, the quickie wedding and the mess that our actor has become since it happened. That was parentheses, I guess, after I revealed it. So boom, it was there. It's a lot easier to get, you know, power of attorney when you're married. Basically at the end of November 2015, there was a premiere and she basically had to keep him upright and moving on a red carpet while she tried to do a couple of interviews without him crashing to the ground. I mean, this is the kind of behavior that gets you fired off by Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, it's this kind of situation. And then even this, it says, this is from March 2016, and it says, Johnny Depp, who will regain his A-plus list once his never-ending franchise has its next release, took over the makeup counter in Barney's, proceeded to give himself a makeover. He spent about $700 on makeup. he used to the counter but did not take with him. I mean, it's just this kind of behavior. And then, of course, you don't get the gig. Let's see. Then things like in April 2016 about basically it's about him taking an interest in who his daughter's dating, but he's so strung out that he couldn't. And February 16th, 2016, Johnny had to have paramedics look him over yesterday afternoon because his heart was racing from the meth and the booze. So, I mean, that was just, I didn't even read them all. But you could just see that was just kind of like the everyday, just because it wasn't like they were necessarily hiding. You know, they were out and about. So these were the kind of things that were going through this period. You know, they had a nice kind of stable thing. And then you see like in 2014, it just kind of just starts collapsing. And what went from someone just with a problem to someone going downhill in a hurry was just this trying to keep up with Amber. Trying to keep up with death, because that's Amber. She's death. And then in 2014, like I said, the fights became more of the buzz. And in 2016, long after they were married, some of these fights, you know, they kind of became public knowledge. Those, and so the things that I was talking about in 2014, then, you know, we got to see the texts. We got to hear the recordings. And then those fights escalated to even more physical violence. To the point where Johnny, you know, that one time he took a swing at Amber and missed, but broke his hand on the wall while he's filming. And then they had to shut down production because he did that. And do you remember, he did a movie called Into the Woods. And in 2015, he skipped all the press for it because he was secretly in rehab. And obviously it didn't take, because 2016 was worse. 2017 was worse than that. And 2018 has been horrific. So it was at that time in 2015 when he went to rehab, right around that, that, you know, she knew he was vulnerable and she pressed. You know, she wanted control. And I don't know. I mean, I think that we can all agree, though, that from the time he started publicly dating her, Amber, that is, that things have pretty much gone steadily downhill, and there has been zero recovery. There has been zero getting back to what he once was. You know, death. So on May 20th, 2016, Johnny's mom died. And then on May 21st, was the 9/11 call about the abuse. And I think that's the one where he threw the cell phone at her. That could have been the video. But anyway, that's the 911 call where she was getting abused by Johnny. And she says it's because she just wanted to talk about his mom. And then May 22nd, they split. And then May 23rd, 2016, she files for divorce. So, I mean, this is a four pretty rough days for him and for her. I mean, she gets beat up. He loses his mom. You know, they split and she files for divorce. So then what happens is this is May. And Johnny's lawyers just take pot shot after pot shot. I don't know if you remember, but that summer of 2016, TMZ is just basically whatever his lawyers say, we're just going to print it word for word because we're totally Team Johnny. And this goes on the whole summer. And then on August 12th, well, okay, also through that whole summer, they're taking pot shot, right? And they're just calling her money hungry and greedy and a gold digger. I mean, just the worst things in the world to call. They are. This is not the time to talk about that kind of stuff. I talked about it before, you know, before she was getting beat up by Johnny. But the thing is that they were... Their whole point was that she was a gold digger, but that she was a lying gold digger. That somehow she used makeup and had doctored the one audio tape and was lying about all the other violence, even when she had other people back her up or other witnesses. They just said that she was doing all of this just to get the money. And do you remember she said that if she got the money, she would donate it all to charity. But on August 12, 2016, she was done with them. And there was that leak of the video of Johnny throwing the wine bottle and the glass at her. And then 4 days later, Johnny seemed settled. Because you don't want that kind of stuff. They don't know how many other videos she has. They don't know any of that. Now, she denied ever leaking it. Okay, so it was her girlfriend or something. She knew about it. Who else is going to have the video? But she agreed to donate every single dollar she got from him in the divorce. Maybe not the money that she got during the marriage, but during the divorce to, you know, basically shelters who are helping women who've been victims of domestic violence. And then Johnny agreed to match it because he didn't want to seem, he realized, oh my gosh, this is a horrible PR situation. Look at this. I mean, she's just, we've basically been telling TMZ to call her a gold digger and that she's been lying about the domestic violence stuff all summer. And now here she is, she's going to go ahead and give all this money. So we have to match it because we're bigger people. In fact, we're not just going to match it. We're going to give more. But here's kind of where they screwed up because they never gave Amber the money. They said, well, since she's going to go ahead and donate it, we'll just go ahead and donate it for her. Well, there's a couple things wrong with that. First of all, it's her money to donate and to where she wants to donate it. Second of all, do we really trust that Johnny is going to do it? Also, you know, it is her money and she would get the tax deduction for donating it. Johnny doesn't get to keep that tax deduction for himself. And as far as I know, and I could be wrong, somebody check. But because I feel like they would have made a bigger deal and I don't remember seeing it. Has Johnny ever actually donated money and matched? I know that Amber gave her money. But I don't remember if Johnny did his matching or not. But they sure did settle really, really quickly when that video came out. So let's fast forward kind of to this year, because I think that this year is where we just, you know, you see the pictures of him and now he looks like death. And Amber's kind of taken that and now she's got a career and, you know, she's going to be an Aquaman and her career seems to be taking off and she looks full of life and you wonder, oh my gosh, did she suck the life out of Johnny and put it inside herself or something? Because he looked rough. And there were some stories that came out when he was in Russia. And the stories were that he was, you know, making people pay $1,000 to see him and stuff like that. And there was this big dispute about it. And it wasn't a huge dispute. Remember, when he was in Russia, he was doing it with his band. It wasn't for a movie or anything. And you always have meet and greets if you're a band. And you're going to charge a lot of money if you can get away with charging a lot of money. So I didn't understand the big controversy. It sounded like people were paying just to spend time with him that were teenagers or whatever. And yeah, because it was a meet and greet. But on the other side, if any of those teenagers showed any kind of interest in him sexually, Johnny went after them. And he went after them hard. And he was fully aware of, you know, what he was doing. And I think that, you know, the Russian government was more than happy to just look the other way while they took copious notes or videos or recordings, just in case those would ever come in handy later. You know, that's something that that they would want to keep. And he has continued this downward spiral. And I think part of the problem is like when he's spending time with, I don't know, Not so much like Alice Cooper, who he was on the tour with and everything, but when he hangs out with people like Marilyn Manson and other people who have this party kind of lifestyle that just goes 24/7, this is not what he needs. I mean, the guy's getting older. He needs some rehab to try and get his career back on track. Now, I'm sure he was counting on getting that Pirates money. With all that's going on and all the money that he spent, I think he's probably counting on that Pirates money. You know, it's nice to get a nice little $20 million chunk of change or $30 million, whatever the deal was going to be, and it said he's getting zero. So now he's going to have to go do a bunch of smaller movies to try and make up for that. And to do the smaller movies, he's actually going to have to try and act. And the time commitment is going to be extensive, you know, much more extensive. Pirates movies take a while to complete. But there's so many people in the cast and everything, and there's so much FX that you don't have to, it's not a big taxing kind of acting. And you're not working every day. But now, to make up for that, he's going to have to work a lot. And he's going to have to stop playing in the band unless they're making a ton of money, which I doubt. So he's going to have to go make a bunch of movies. He's got a lot of bills. You know, the only income he has coming in are whatever movies he decides to make. And I think he was waiting on the Disney decision. Some money from the band. But he's got this outlay of cash, and he's selling off things right and left, selling it off. But even as late as 2017? November of last year. And this is blind of November 7th, and I revealed on November 15th. But there was a hotel bathroom covered in blood. And not just a few drops, but like everywhere. And the hotel had to call in a special cleaning team. This is a guy who needs help. This is a guy who, if he doesn't do something, he's going to be facing his own mortality. He is getting the life sucked right out of him, and he is himself going to meet the Grim Reaper up close in person. And I'm not talking about Tony Todd. All right. That is the conclusion of 3 hours of three parts of Johnny Depp. And I will see you here tomorrow for November 1st, a brand new month of deep dives and basement blasts. I'll see you then. Take care.